Hello everyone and welcome to the Associate and Affiliate Cricket Podcast. We have a big show today and joining me as always is Cricket Europe's Andrew Nixon. Welcome Andrew.
Hi Russ, hi everybody.
And we're very pleased to welcome our guest today, which is the ICC Europe Development Manager, Nick Pink. Welcome Nick.
Good morning and thanks very much for the chance to speak to you today, Russ.
Oh, you're most welcome. Let's start with some of the grassroots work that the ICC Europe's doing. This summer they've started a street cricket initiative. Could you tell us a bit about that?
We launched it earlier this year in February. The aim really, I guess, was to try and reach a new audience and to try and get a new population playing the game in six of our European countries. Those countries being sort of Netherlands, France, Germany, Spain, Finland and Greece. And, you know, the majority of those countries have been involved in European cricket for a number of years. And I guess where they believed, as much as we believed, the link for street cricket could get into was into some of their urban environments, trying to encourage, I guess, that new participant to take part, but also to hopefully develop new partnerships in country that will enable cricket to grow very much at that kind of grassroots level and start to build a bit more of a kind of mass involvement in the game. Inevitably, as you know, I'm sure you're both aware within your own roles, you know, cricket is very much a minority sport in Europe, particularly as you sort of step off the UK shores. And, you know, I guess what we were trying to do with this initiative is demonstrate that we need to do things slightly differently. We need to work slightly differently with our members to enable that that growth and development to take part, which is underpinned by our ICC development strategy.
And I gather then this is mostly aimed at native-born players then, as opposed to kind of expat community?
Yeah, I mean, I think to be fair, it's kind of very much driven by where the members are. And I guess as much as that is, you know, in terms of where their urban environments are, we have seen quite a large, I guess, indigenous population involved. But then, you know, I guess in Europe, what is an indigenous population? You know, we do have expatriate Pakistani, Indian, Australian and other nations that are now second, third, and sometimes fourth generation. So I guess for many of our members, what they have been keen to do is try to lock it into their national culture as much as possible. If I use France as an example, they've developed a complete new link with an organization called Penguin Kids. Penguin Kids is a kind of grassroots community sport organization that just sort of latched onto cricket because it was seen as a means to deliver their sort of social good message. Whilst, I guess, for France cricket, it was about getting people playing the game of cricket. So that partnership worked really well.
What will be the next step after this type of program? One of the problems I think comes out is in the census figures that have been released recently is that although there are a lot of junior development type of programs, there's not actually a lot of juniors getting into league cricket. So what's the next step to get them across that hurdle?
Really good point. And that's why we work through our national federations there, Russ, because that lock into that national system has to happen at some point. I guess there is a big step from junior involvement programs, the sort of general participation programs that you're talking about, and getting young people playing regular hardball league cricket. And I think particularly in some of our European cultures, that step change is such a huge progression. You know, to face that red hardball for the first time and getting hit with that compared to the softball is a very different psychology, a very different mentality to accept. So I guess from that perspective, there's almost several steps along the way to enable you to get to that point where you are playing regular junior cricket. And that's for a lot of our members, it's engaging the clubs that have been traditionally playing cricket, in their member countries. Encouraging them to have a strong youth section, and maybe underpinning that by their participation in league cricket. So enabling to almost a sort of equivalent of a club mark or a club system that, you know, that operates in other countries. So that you're really kind of pushing and encouraging that to happen. I think there's a little bit of support and education provided to those clubs as well. Not only in terms of building their own coaching and officiating capacity, but also, I guess, understanding their role within, whether it's France cricket or the KNCB or in the DCF in Denmark or wherever it might be, so that they understand that they're actually part of a wider network and it's important that this focus really happens. Because as you say, it's not an easy paradigm. It's an area that we've really focused in on from an ICC perspective because, there is, I guess, we've seen an increase, as you've noticed, with the census data in terms of the number of participants, but we haven't necessarily seen that lock into junior playing. So this is a real big focus area, but I don't think it's not a simple exercise of taking, you know, Andrew Nixon or Russ Degnan, who've just taken part in a bit of street cricket, to the club to suddenly get them involved in junior playing or junior league cricket. There's a lot that needs to be done in between that.
The club issue is an interesting one, because one of the things that came out of some of our early interviews is that most clubs aren't really clubs in the sense that we think of clubs in Australia or England. They're really just teams of people who've got together to play cricket. Does ICC have a role to kind of develop a club culture in those nations?
No, I don't think, I don't think we do, but that's to say, it's not for us necessarily, I guess, to determine what a club culture should look like, because it will be very different in each country. I mean, I've just returned from Denmark. I was there at the beginning of the week, and there is a very strong club culture in Denmark. Very little schools cricket. But I guess one of the things that they're looking at is almost trying to develop satellite links for some of their clubs, so that they continue to have a pathway of young people coming through their clubs, so that they'll be sustained longer term. And actually the DCF, the Danish Cricket Federation, are doing quite a lot to enable that to happen. The knock-on effect of that, hopefully, is a more sustainable cricket structure in the future. But as you say, a number of other members just don't have that culture of club cricket. So it's kind of looking at it probably in a slightly different way. If you take what France are doing with the USEP project, you know, getting primary school children involved in cricket for the first time, it's utilising probably that structure initially. So building a tournament structure, building a competition structure, if you like, around the schools that are involved, which would naturally lend itself potentially to school clubs, after school clubs. You're almost then encouraging the young people to take responsibility. And one of the things I think we can do from an ICC perspective is, I guess, almost reward those young people who are volunteering their time and almost sort of put it through a proper volunteering program. Not to say that we would be there regulating and controlling it, because again, I think that would be done at the national level or even the local level, but at least rewarding the young people by giving them a connection to the ICC, a connection to something broader than perhaps just the school that they're working in. So I think there's ways we can do it, but I think it's always got to be delivered and managed at a local level, Russ.
With the administrative capacity of a lot of these places, one of the things I see occasionally is old articles showing these types of initiatives that just seem to fizzle out over a period of time. How do you stop this from happening in terms of programs that are basically based around a single person really pushing it along, that then they run out of time or something happens?
You're absolutely right, you know, and you see that, I'm sure you see that in Australia, I'm sure, you know, Andrew and I see it regularly in the UK, where you get a kind of committed volunteer, you get somebody who has been involved in running their cricket club or whatever club it might be for a long, long time, and they step off and they go off and do something else, and there's nothing left from underneath. So there's a responsibility there to make sure that that doesn't happen. It's about, I guess, giving responsibility to others. It's identifying who those others might be. And I think an area, a big area of development for us in European cricket, is to engage our young people in a slightly different way. And, you know, almost encouraging that sort of youth leadership, that youth development bit to happen. Because not all young people, those young people that we're engaging in those participation figures that you see through the census that's come through, a lot of them aren't going to go on to play for France or Netherlands or Germany or whoever it might be. But they might become very good administrators, they might become very good volunteers, they might become excellent web managers for the or social networkers or whoever it might be. So we've got to probably try and engage that group in a different way, which does mean probably an additional responsibility on those administrators, as you're saying, but the long-term benefits will be huge. And we're starting to see some of that taking place at this stage, but it's not an overnight solution. It's going to take a bit of work, but I'm confident that actually, if we've got members moving in that direction, we'll be in a stronger position longer term.
One aspect of European cricket that is probably, we think of maybe perhaps a little bit better than some of the other regions, is women's cricket. Just out of curiosity, how many female players are there in Europe in the Association Affiliate thing? Do you have figures on that?
Well, we've got figures on overall participants, which includes players, which are, we've got 40,000 women and girls involved in European cricket. The bit I don't have is the specific number. We've just done the data, as you know, so we're looking, trying to get through all of that and provide a kind of specific figure. I suspect that the women's playing numbers would be in the region of, you know, you're probably looking at a few thousand in total. I don't think it will be huge numbers. But if you, I mean, again, I'm only estimating here, Russ, but I'll just give you a figure so I don't sound like some waffly politician trying to avoid answering the question. I would have thought you're probably looking at about 10,000 regular players across Europe, which is not bad. It's not terrible. It's definitely a target focus area for us. Members are organising their own tournament in Italy this year, and there's a few others going on in other parts of Europe, and I think that's fine. I guess for us, our focus will be to support members to build a women's cricket development programme in country first, and that's where some of the support I think we'll provide in 2014 will go to. And we've got some people in European cricket who are doing some terrific work in women's cricket. Take Carrie Carswell in Scotland, who has done some fantastic work in terms of really building a broad base of women's and girls cricket. You know, what Ireland are doing, there's some really great examples there. We've got some international cricketers in those countries as well as Netherlands that we can use as really strong role models. We've got, you know, a good initiative running in Jersey. France Cricket are really taking some of the initiative there, as are many other members. So I think, you know, we need to start to build on that, use some of the strong individuals that have worked very hard to get women's cricket growing, and probably target some of our resources to enable that growth to continue. So I think you're right. I think we are doing some good things, but I think it's a massive area of potential, if I'm honest.
Just on that a second, at the moment the European Championship for Women's Cricket has been Netherlands, Scotland, Ireland for quite a number of years now. Is there any plans to maybe add another team to that, or a Division Two, an official Division Two tournaments in future?
I guess in the short term, Andrew, I guess our answer would probably be not at this stage. And only because I think what we'd like to see is a kind of stronger domestic development programme in place in many of our member countries. And I think once that happens, then I think that would naturally lead itself to a European, whatever it be, a Division Two, European Women's Development Tournament, whatever it might be. But my sense is that members aren't quite there at that stage. And we almost, you know, if you take the men's game and kind of what we're currently doing with some of our European members there, taking the broad principles of very much a kind of grassroots, a sort of bottom-up approach to cricket development, we need to get that bit right first. I think we can support our members to do that. And as I say, I think many are doing some really good work in this area. Then I think it naturally lends itself to probably expanding our European women's tournament structure. Does that answer your question?
It does, yes.
speaking of lower divisions, the Division 3 tournament that was last held in Estonia, will that be continuing?
Yeah, it will. What we're looking to do is we are currently in discussion with all of our members, actually, about their participation in future regional tournaments. This is currently being done in all regions of the ICC, and I guess it kind of underpins what I was just saying in response to Andrew's last question about women's cricket, is we've looked at a number of factors, and there were guidelines developed by the ICC Development Committee in November of 2011. And they were kind of cemented last May. And those basically kind of, again, followed the principles of a kind of approach to grassroots development, a very much bottom-up approach to development of cricket, and were saying that actually, you know, are we fit for purpose in all of our member countries to be participating in a regional event? And, you know, we've got good data that goes back several years now, as you've seen. We've got, you know, a good understanding of where our members are with a lot of their development cricket programs, their plans for the future. And, you know, for some of our members, we felt it's appropriate that actually they're not participating in regional tournaments, and that their focus is very much on domestic development in the same way that we were just talking about for the women's game, and not to have the pressure of having to participate in a regional event every 2 years. And the other side of that is, you know, the income that they receive from the ICC and their non-ICC income, a large proportion of that funding is going towards participating in regional events. So that reapportion of funding now, and that ability to put some of that more into developing in domestic leagues, developing that whole piece that we started off talking about, Russ, in terms of getting more junior involvement players, the street initiatives, the quick cricket initiatives, and getting them into regular playing. By enabling, I guess, a bit more of a focus on that, maybe releasing some of your administrator and development officer time to really focus in on that, we believe is the right thing to do. And actually, by speaking to the members, you know, we've not done it by dictatorship, we've done it very much in a very good way. We've actually had some really good feedback from countries saying, you know what, this is exactly what we think we need to do. This isn't a ban for life. This isn't saying, you know, you're never going to compete again. This is saying, you know, let's work with you. Let's try and get cricket on a firmer base. Let's try and build that sustainability in country. And hopefully, you know, see an increase in playing numbers, see an increase in people playing cricket, and then at the right time, come back into European cricket structures. So from 2014, our plan is to still have three divisions for us. So there'll still be that pathway through to the World T20 qualifier, but there'll be smaller divisions.
And what do you expect the pathway to be for a team to reintegrate into those tournaments? Do they have the option of doing it if they raise their own funds, or?
I guess I'd go back to the principle of the rationale of doing it. The principle's about, I guess, developing the game in country and getting more people participating and more people involved. And, you know, if one of those countries said, well, look, we'll pay for everything, that kind of defeats that principle, if you like. So that's not necessarily what this is about. This is about actually cricket development in its broadest sense. So if a member does come with that, I don't think we'd probably, well, we'd have a dialogue with them, but hopefully we could probably work to a solution which is the same one, but we haven't had that come through at this stage. So there is still that pathway, but I guess it's broadly based on getting more people playing the game of cricket.
And you mentioned before the European T20 for women in Bologna, and I think there's also a European Continental Cup in Bucharest next week. Does the ICC have any role in those types of self-organised tournaments?
Yeah, I mean, we support sometimes with umpires, so we sometimes get involved from that perspective, and we can run workshops. One of the things we're looking at for the women's event that's being organised by Simone and his team in Cricket Italia is potentially sending one of our European Women's Development Officers to support the member countries and their lead officers for women's cricket, and to, I guess, find out a little bit more about what they're doing, how they're doing it, and whether there is some more sort of direct support we can provide to them on that. So I think there are ways we can, and you know, we've continued to do that with a number of other tournaments that are organised by members, or even, you know, just sort of general events that are being organised by members. So there's a number of ways that we can, yeah.
Another match that's actually on this weekend was Austria, who went to Switzerland to play. What is the status of Switzerland at the moment?
Good question. Switzerland, unfortunately, lost its ICC membership last year. The status is still the same, so it is no different. The background to it kind of came in. It all was happening before, and then literally just as I kind of came into office in December 2011. I don't know how much you know about all of that, but unfortunately, there wasn't a solely recognised governing body of cricket in Switzerland from their National Olympic Committee. And that's a fairly fundamental aspect of membership of the ICC. And it then led to suspension and unfortunately removal of Switzerland as a member. And again, that's not to say that they couldn't become a member again in the future, but that solely recognised recognition will be required to enable that to happen.
And they will need to sort that out themselves, I guess, is the official one.
Yeah, and as any member would, you know, any new member coming in would need to organise that themselves, yes.
The most important tournament for you guys coming up is the Division 1 in Sussex. Tell us a little bit what your hopes are for that tournament.
No rain would be nice. Running it in England in Sussex is always a bit dangerous, particularly as I'm looking out my window now and it is pouring with rain. What are we hoping for? We're hoping for good quality cricket. We're hoping for, you know, we're playing on some outstanding facilities at Preston Nomads, Horsham, in the sort of group games. We've got Blackstone, which is the development ground used by Sussex County Cricket Club, and then a finals day at the county ground at Hove. You know, what a tremendous opportunity all of that is. We're going to be announcing shortly that we're going to be live streaming the finals day, which will be managed by Kwipu TV. And they'll also be doing a highlights package every day of the tournament in the lead up to the final, which will be shown through our website in the evening. So, you know, I guess from a promotion and marketing point of view, I hope that it's a real big opportunity for people to realise that, you know, European cricket, associate and affiliate cricket is in a really strong place in Europe. A lot of people still don't know about it. They still think that it's the sort of quintessential Englishman going off to sort of spread the good word of the game, and aren't they doing some great things? But actually, you know, a number of our countries, as you both know, have really worked hard to build some really strong structures in place. And, you know, for many of that, you know, this is the shop window for us to demonstrate just how good European cricket is. And I think once you get to the, you know, the latter ends of the tournament and that finals day, you'll see some really good competitive cricket. And as I say, we'll just sort of keep the fingers crossed that the weather's kind of fair and kind to us. From an organisation perspective, you know, we're experienced at running European tournaments. We're experienced at running tournaments per se. So I'm confident that the organisation would be good. You know, we've selected and put in place our very best umpires, regional referees. We've got a good bunch of web managers and others who've been, you know, really experienced at kind of doing all of that for many years. They're live scoring the events. You know, we're doing as much as we can to really raise the profile of this Division 1 tournament.
And are you hoping to get some media coverage from within England for it as well?
Yeah, unfortunately it does coincide with the Ashes Test match, which we did schedule this before the dates were released, which is a bit frustrating, but hey, I guess they probably don't look at European Division 1 before working out when the Ashes matches would be. Yeah, we are, and actually the Gibraltar cricket team are on Cricket AM the weekend before, on the Saturday morning, which is brilliant. We've got our partnership, Andrew, with All Out Cricket, so they're doing a bit of extra promotion, and we're going to be sending out our newsletter. I was going to say it was done yesterday. It wasn't. It'll be done early part of next week, Monday or Tuesday. And there's a big feature article there from your good friend Tim Brooks about Division 1. And so I guess from that perspective, we're really trying. We had a European Cricket Day at Lord's on the 19th of May. In fact, we tried to run that as a bit of a European-wide sort of European Cricket Day, and I think it's something we're going to continue to do on an annual basis. But we had the Daily Mirror, we had Sky Sports, we had, you know, a few others there in attendance. So that was an opportunity for us to kind of not only sort of bombard them with emails or tweets or whatever other way we can communicate, but actually to kind of give them the face-to-face information as well. You know, we're going to be competing against the England-Australia matches, but I think hopefully we'll get some media coverage.
In terms of media coverage for that type of tournament, we're fans here of making All Nations qualify, and I guess this sort of tournament would actually, obviously it's not going to get England into it, but it does miss out on even having the high-profile associates like Ireland and Netherlands along who have that media profile. Yes. Is that something that you would prefer to see in?
I think they're in very different places, if I'm honest, Russ. I think, you know, the high performance program there to support those three countries is in the right place. It's not to say in the future that any one of those three might be competing if they don't automatically qualify. You know, they would naturally fall back in. So I think the fact that they've already qualified for the global qualifier later this year in UAE has kind of avoided that from happening. I also think there is a gulf, you know, there is a very big step between our next best teams, if you like, and the three high-performance countries. So in that respect, the playing standard, I think you'll see, you know, some good quality cricket there. I think, you know, going on to what we were talking about before in terms of the restructure of the European tournaments, you know, we're expecting our Division 1 next year to be six teams. And I think if that's the case, you're probably looking at six teams of a very equal standard. And the quality and the playing standard of that tournament will be very strong, I believe. So I think from that point of view, it kind of a little bit answers that question. But it's, you know, something we're always aware of whenever the pathway events are taking place, that, you know, Ireland, Scotland, Netherlands, whether they automatically qualify or not.
I suppose the argument of some of the stronger European sides outside of those countries would be that just as Ireland and Scotland won't matches against full members, they won't matches against Ireland and Scotland to test themselves at a slightly higher level.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. I think they do and they don't in some ways. I think it's kind of probably where it's where our next best teams want to get to. We do at youth level, and you know, it's very evident at youth level, unless there's a very strong year in sort of Guernsey or Jersey or even Denmark in the under-19s this year, it's going to be very difficult for those countries competing against Ireland, Scotland or Netherlands at those age groups, and, you know, even harder at a senior men's level. So, you know, it isn't, to be honest, it's not a number of those countries. I don't get many calls or many emails, you know, complaining necessarily about that. And if anything, probably what they want is more competition between themselves. So they want more regular competition against teams of an equal standard, or those that are just maybe slightly ahead or kind of within that area. So, and if you look at Guernsey, Jersey, Denmark, and Italy, Italy dropped down unfortunately from World Cricket League 3 into World Cricket League 4, which is where Denmark are. Jersey are hosting World Cricket League 6 in about 4 weeks' time. Guernsey are in World Cricket League 5. We've got the potential, and it is a potential, that all four of our members that are competing in the World Cricket League being in Division 4 next year. And that would be a really good position in many ways, because they're progressing in the right way, and it could lead to some really good competition.
In those countries in Europe, they also obviously like to generate media coverage, and the national team's a good way of doing that. How should they go about be promoting this tournament, and what can you do to help them?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I guess beyond the obvious sort of press releases that we do, and beyond sort of social media and other aspects, I think for many of them, they do already have established links with certain media outlets. What can we do? I think, you know, it's almost trying to sort of hopefully role model some of the good practice that exists, and building a link maybe with a sporting magazine or a regular editorial that's being written in country. I do think social media is a great means to really get cricket on the map. And I don't think, if I'm honest, I don't think we're very good at it as across the region. I think we're getting better, and I think certain countries are really very good, particularly on Twitter and Facebook. But I think that there's a lot more we can do there, and I think there's a lot more we can do in terms of engaging the players and getting some more of the young people involved. And if we go back to what we were saying about street cricket earlier, and I know this is slightly detached from talking about a promotion of Division 1, but we're starting to see some of these other agencies and these other young people, and Andrew, you might have picked up on it in terms of the Twitter as well, starting to tweet about what they're doing with street cricket. Now, you almost don't want to control that. You also want to make sure nothing bad is being said, but you almost want that to sort of embryonically start to sort of develop itself. And I think that's a little bit of maybe some of our challenge for some of our members in particular, is that bit where you've almost got to let control go. You've almost got to let that kind of happen. And that's quite difficult sometimes, particularly for those, you know, that are so passionate and involved in the game. It's almost got to just be that natural point of development that happens. I'm not sure that really answers your question, but I think, you know, I guess in short, we're going to do as much as we possibly can. Really trying to encourage members to get their media. I mean, we've done a media plan for them. We've sent that out, several weeks ago, to really try to sort of encourage some of the,
you know, getting onto radio interviews, trying to get into the local newspapers, the national newspapers, really sort of drum up the social media side of things, as I say, and do as much as they can.
Currently, European tournaments of senior sides are predominantly 20-over cricket. Is there any plans to bring back 50-over crickets?
Not in the short term, Andrew. You know, the element of the Euro regional tournaments is as a pathway through to the World T20, and that's and certainly from the guidelines that we've received from the Development Committee at ICC global level, it's felt that those event structures are appropriate for that pathway. We've obviously got the World Cricket League, which provides opportunities for those four teams we've just been talking about to participate in 50 over cricket. And, you know, there's always the opportunity for members to organise their own matches between, you know, local countries at 50 over. I think one of the things I would say is when you look at the domestic leagues being played across Europe, there is a predominance of 2020 and there's a predominance of kind of shorter versions, probably outside of the Ireland, Scotland, Netherlands, Denmark, Italy, Guernsey, Jerseys, maybe one or two others. So you then look at the appropriateness of having a 50-over competition at a regional level if countries aren't participating at the domestic level. But I think it's a good question. I think it's something that we'll, you know, keep talking about. But at this stage, we think it's probably right as it is.
A bit of an elephant in the room as far as European cricket goes is England and they've recently selected Boyd Rankin for the 2020 squad. Alexi Cavesi has switched his allegiance from the Netherlands to England, and obviously in the past Owen Morgan, Amjad Khan, Ed Joyce, although he's now back for Ireland. Is there a worry that there is a possibility of ICC Europe acting as a sort of feeder system to the England team, or are you hoping that this will sort of calm down a bit now that Ireland, Scotland and Netherlands are getting stronger and having higher profile cricket?
I think that last point is the key bit. It's improving the quality of cricket at a national level in those countries. And I think we're starting to see that coming through. It's always going to be there, you know, whilst the eligibility and qualification system's there. I mean, we've just seen an Australian playing for, open the batting for New Zealand in the Champions Trophy. You know, you see South Africans playing for England, arguably. And, you know, that happens. And I think, when we live in the society that we do, it's inevitable almost that there is going to be that. Is it a source of frustration? Yeah, absolutely. You know, speak to the guys in Cricket Ireland. It is really very much. And, you know, I think, you know, they feel disappointed when they're working so hard to develop cricketers and cricketers that have been all the way through their youth structure. You know, you think about the hours and the investment placed on those individuals and then to see them playing for England is, you know, disappointing to them. And I think, you know, it's about, I guess, for those members, continuing to play as much good quality international cricket. And I think, you know, this summer's been a great advertisement, I think, for European high-performance cricket. You know, Ireland against Pakistan, two really close games. And, you know, arguably Ireland should have won at least one of those games. Netherlands, South Africa, you know, really good quality cricket. And I thought Netherlands batted really well in response to a very high total. You know, you look at the YB40, there've been some good victories recently in place there. I think associate high-performance cricket is a very strong place. And hopefully all three teams will qualify for the World T20 next year and will be in a strong position for the World Cup in 2015. And, you know, we've got to continue to put our members, I guess, at that high performance level in those opportunities to A, play against full members, but secondly, regularly, I guess, qualify for the major tournaments and to be competing against them almost on an equal level in that respect. But it's not happening overnight, but I think what those members are doing and the way that we're able to support them, and we're able to support them, you know, Andrew, at a high performance level through additional funding above and beyond the high performance funding through initiatives like TAP, which has brought in more full member country matches, but funding as well to support those members to enable that to happen, which I think is crucial. Is it going to continue to happen? Well, it probably will, but it's, you know, but hopefully not to the degree that it has happened in the past. And I think, you know, it's inevitable that, you know, any team, any full member team is going to look at opportunities to try and strengthen its side by potentially, you know, stretching it as much as they possibly can.
We talked about the eligibility rules in our previous episode. Currently there's nothing to stop a player playing for Ireland today and then England tomorrow, but then he'd have to wait 4 years to play for Ireland again. Would you like to see that sort of stand down period maybe reduced?
It's being looked at the moment, Andrew, actually. And there is some discussion about that being reduced. And I think that's probably right, because it's a long time to be waiting, and it's a long time, you know, and as a player, you're thinking about that, aren't you? I mean, if you're in your late 20s or even early 30s, and you know that it's going to take you 4 years to come back, you know, what are you going to do? You know, how much cricket have you got left in you? So, but how much more cricket could you potentially give to your sort of national team? So, yeah, certainly that's been looked at the moment.
There was a similar article this week about a Jersey player who had qualified in the past and then was not going to be qualified in Morrison. If you've qualified for a country, why is it that you aren't forever qualified for that country?
I mean, that was quite a specific case. It all goes down to core criteria and development criteria. And for development events, you've got to meet both those elements. And, you know, without perhaps going into the details of that specific case, there are examples where members don't necessarily, national team players don't necessarily meet the core criteria. And if they don't, if they're a 4 or 7 year resident, then they've got to meet, regardless of whether they meet all of that, they've also got to meet the development criteria. And that's, I think, there to protect the development program, to protect the development game. And in this case, those elements weren't met, unfortunately. So that's kind of how, unfortunately, the process sometimes works.
Thank you, Nick.
I hope I was as honest as I can be, and hopefully, you know, it was good to kind of have the discussion with you. And, you know, I'm always happy to be asked the different questions. You know, it tests us as much as hopefully providing you with some good information, and make sure that, I guess, we're on the right track with things as well, because, you know, we're doing as much as we possibly can. We're doing everything we can to support European cricket to develop. We're not always going to get it 100% right, but we're working hard to do our best to support our membership and to support cricket to grow. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you for coming on. It's
yeah, thanks.
Appreciated at our end that we can talk to someone who's right in the centre and thick of things. So there's been some cricket on the last couple of weeks, Andrew. The Australia Ace played both Scotland and Ireland. The Scotland match, Scotland probably a little disappointed. Australia A made 372 in the first innings, and then Scotland were bowled out for 149 and 93.
Yeah, very disappointed for Scotland. Fielding, you know, it has to be said, a weakened side. A lot of the county players were unavailable. Some did play, Matt Make and Ian Wardlaw, for example. But, you know, a very strong Scotland side. But a very strong Australia A side, sorry. And to some extent, Scotland didn't bowl as well. Peter Siddle should not be scoring a first-class century against any sort of attack. So, yeah, disappointing for Scotland. It's good to see Callum McLeod bowling again. He's had some problems with his action. Obviously, they're all sorted out now. He's been playing as a batsman for the last few years. But overall, very disappointed for Scotland.
And in the Ireland match, unfortunately, it was significantly rain-reduced, but a couple of generous declarations, quite a tight finish.
It was in the end, yeah, and an excellent century from Paul Sterling. I think he's obviously, this is one day cricket, he's now the ninth best batsman in the world. Still can't make the Middlesex first team for the county championship. That's another story. And in the end, you know, Ireland in their second innings, chasing a big total, collapse initially, but late order fight back, especially when Stuart Poynter scoring 63, got them pretty close. And in the end, you know, it was a 93-run margin, but I think the game was a lot closer than that margin suggests.
Yeah, and again, it shows their depth. Again, they weren't at full strength by any means, and The Australian side wasn't that far from being full strength itself, given the bowling and the batting available to them. So it's a good indication, probably, what is essentially two A sides, that Ireland is competitive-ish, we'll say.
Yeah, you know, it'd be interesting to have seen a full-strength Ireland side against Australia A. It might have been a lot closer, and Ireland could have potentially even won.
Rain is continuing to plague the summer. Both the Scotland and the Netherlands' last WB40 matches were washed out.
But Netherlands have had a win since we last spoke, which is obviously fantastic news for them. They beat Worcestershire by 6 wickets in a heavily rain-reduced match to 18 overs. Obviously restricted Worcestershire to 90 from their 18 overs, which is a very good bowling performance. And won with a couple of overs to spare. So we finally got a win for one of the associate sides in this last season of the YB40. But overall, it's been a disappointing season for both of them.
Irish domestic cricket, they started their T20 trophy. There was streaming of the games that was on last night, and it wasn't the greatest of games ever, but it's great to see the media coverage coming through.
And the other important thing about the games yesterday were that these were paid entry matches. You know, the 3-day games and the 1-day games we've had so far were free entry. This was paid entry. It was, I think, €10 entry. And they got a crowd. They got people to actually pay to come and watch Irish domestic cricket. And that is, you know, real progress. It's really important to get people to actually want to pay to come and see your domestic cricket, never mind your international cricket, is, you know, it's really big for Ireland, is that?
In funding issues, the Asian Cricket Council has granted $200,000 to Nepal for infrastructure development and to go on a Sri Lanka tour, which is good news for them. They're continuing to progress well.
Nepal are very still an up-and-coming team. Lots of development initiatives there. Unfortunately, the national team doesn't always play well. I think I once described them as the South Africa of associate cricket. They tend to choke right at the last minute. But they seem to be getting better in that. They bounce back well in Division 3, as we said earlier in an earlier episode. So hopefully, these tournaments can, this funding and tour of Sri Lanka can help them progress even further and give the national team more experience and playing against stronger opponents, which could stand them instead. I think Nepal will be hopeful of qualifying for that World 2020.
And in the category of this could only happen to them, the ICC Americas donated $8,000 to the US YCA, if I'm mistaken.
Yes, it should have been the US ACA. Quite what USACA can do with $8,000, considering they're mired in debts approaching, I think they may be even seven-figure debts now, never mind six figures. But obviously, Jamie Harrison had recently heavily criticised the ICC for their treatment of the US and whether they were really taking development of cricket in the US seriously or not, or whether they were just looking to perhaps exploit a market that's there. So he was obviously really pleased to get this $8,000 donation, and then a couple of days later they rang up, so sorry, we've made a bit of a mistake here. Can we have the money back? And really, I described it in an article in Cricket Europe as accidentally funding the right organisation. And obviously we're going to have Jamie on a future episode, and it'll be interesting to get his side of the story.
Yeah, I have to say that I was a little concerned actually when I saw the unsolicited donation, purely on the basis that you really don't want your sporting organisations giving money randomly to other bodies, even if it is a body that does good work like the USYCA.
You want to be in a situation where people request funds for specific programs and whatnot. So, yeah, just giving money out does raise a bit of concern.
The other news from this week was that the qualification for the 2019 World Cup has been released in some form.
Yeah, not officially by the ICC yet. I did contact the ICC, and I know other people have, and they sort of refused to confirm or deny anything that was in the original article, but it is apparently based on a leaked document that has been discussed at ICC meetings, not that you'd know that from any of the press releases about those meetings.
It's not completely biased against associations, but it does actually make it somewhat difficult for them to qualify. They need to play a minimum of 24 games over a four-year period, which, if they haven't played in the previous World Cup, is really going to push the limit of how many games they might have actually played. The other issue, of course, is that it's based on the ranking. The ranking is very biased when it's between two nations that are very heavily separated in the rankings and not necessarily going to be very easy for those teams to get up. It's also a little bit random, the rankings sometimes, which could cause all sorts of ruptures if something weird happens at the last minute.
Yeah, I mean, we saw last year when Bangladesh beat Ireland in three 2020 nationals, climbed to fourth and lost to Scotland and dropped down to 12th. So obviously the 2020 rankings have a much lower sample size. You've seen recently Bangladesh actually cancel the tour of Ireland, and allegedly one of the reasons is that they're worried about dropping down the rankings and potentially, you know, harming their chances of getting one of those automatic places in future World Cups. And, you know, this is one of the problems with using rankings as qualification, is that you can, to some extent, game the system. You can minimise your risk of dropping outside that cut-off point, eight teams apparently it is. So you don't want that to happen. You know, the other thing is they say certain criteria. It mentions that one of those criteria is that minimum number of games, but who knows what other criteria there is. It could be that you can only qualify as one of those eight automatic ones if you are a full member. If Ireland get to eighth in the world, they might not actually qualify automatically for the World Cup. They might say, well, you have to be a full member. I joked on Twitter the other day that the criteria will be being a full member of that isn't Bangladesh and Zimbabwe. and I think the criteria could be set up to make that the likely outcome. But I'm a cynic.
You are a cynic. There's a few games coming up. Scotland will be playing Kenya in the World Cricket League, and as well as a couple of T20 games. Your thoughts on those?
Yeah, I mean, Kenya are very much out of contention for the World Cricket League Championship. They could still theoretically qualify, but it's asking quite a lot. Ireland and the Netherlands are sort of well ahead. Well, Ireland are well ahead, and Netherlands are looking like they may join them. And I think Scotland are still heavy favourites. Scotland will be looking to maybe try and overtake the Netherlands and get into second place and get that automatic world spot in the 2015 World Cup. Scotland, heavy favourites.
And Ireland to play the Netherlands in the I Cup as well. You'd expect Ireland, if they win this, they'll be able to book their place in the final probably, so something they'll be looking to do.
Yeah, and Netherlands announced their squad yesterday, and for the I Cup, because they are pretty much out of contention for the final now, they've picked something of a development squad, certainly in terms of the bowling attack. Obviously, you know, Peter Boran and Tom Cooper are still playing, but the rest of the side is quite a development side. I'm looking forward to seeing Daniel Doram, a 15-year-old, six foot six, I think he is, left-arm spinner from St. Maarten, one of the Dutch Caribbean territories, who I saw in the European Under-15 Championship last year. He's a very good ball. I'm looking forward to seeing how he copes with four-day cricket. But he certainly, in that Under-15 tournament, he bowled superbly. I saw him bowl a spell of 10 overs and go for just four runs, three of which were wide. And he can bat as well. And he's a sort of bowler who takes any run scored off him as a personal insult. And it'd be interesting to see how he does against a much stronger opposition.
There's a few warm-ups going on. The European T20 warm-up with Germany, Belgium, Jersey, France, Luxembourg and Denmark will be on in the Netherlands this week. Good to see that there's that sort of opportunity for them to fine-tune in the last couple of weeks before this big tournament.
Although Luxembourg have since pulled out of the tournament, unfortunately. They've been and instead, rather than having the Netherlands A take part in it, it's now going to be the two sort of professional sides in the Netherlands, the Seafarers and the Hurricanes. So, but still, good preparation for the other countries, and playing against, especially if Hurricanes and Seafarers have their top players, you'll have the likes of Tom Cooper and Peter Boren and, you know, some of the Dutch international players playing in that, and that could provide a pretty stiff test for Jersey, France, Denmark, Germany and Belgium, who, all of whom will be hoping to make the semi-finals of that tournament in Sussex.
In the, amongst the smaller nations, there's a Continental Cup going on in Bucharest between Romania, Russia, Macedonia, Slovenia, Bulgaria and Serbia, which we haven't got a lot of information on, but again, it's good to know that these nations are getting an opportunity to play and test their skills.
Yeah, and obviously we've spoke with Nick about some of these countries no longer playing in ICC Europe tournaments, so if they can arrange some of their own tournaments, providing that the cost of playing in these tournaments isn't taken over from development projects, and you know this is a good opportunity for those teams. Some of them aren't ICC Europe members, and you know, perhaps make their case to become an ICC member in the future.
Thank you, Andrew.
Oh, no problem.